In the carriage, Mary found herself telling the vicar everything that had happened that day in Launceston. And then, in a whisper, she recounted the horrors she had learned about her uncle's involvement in wrecking and murder on the coast. The vicar's face beneath the black shovel hat turned towards her. "So the landlord talks when he is drunk?" And it seemed to Mary that his voice lacked something of its usual gentle quality. But when she looked up at him, his eyes stared back at her, cold and impersonal as ever. "When my uncle has lived on brandy for 5 days, he'll bare his soul before the world. That's why I know." Francis Davy leant forward in his seat. They were approaching the turning to Altenham. "The driver will take you on to Jamaica Inn." Then he asked, "Am I the only man you have honoured with your confidence, or do I share it with the landlord's brother?" "Jem Merlin knows. He said little, though, and I know he is not friendly with my uncle. Anyway, it don't matter now. Jem rides to custody for another crime." As he stepped out into the road, the vicar bared his head under the rain, and she saw the thick white hair frame his face like a halo. He smiled and bowed. "Sleep well tonight. Tomorrow is Christmas Day, and the bells of Altenham will be ringing for peace and goodwill. I shall think of you." He waved his hand to the driver, and the carriage went on without him. Mary sat in the corner, and through the window the voices of men came out of the darkness. In the distance were the lean chimneys of Jamaica Inn crowning the skyline like a gallows. Down the road came a company of men. A shot rang out, and the driver of the carriage crumpled in his seat and fell. A face was thrust in at the carriage window, a face crowned with matted hair that fell in a fringe above the scarlet, bloodshot eyes. Jos Merlin smiled. The crazy, delirious smile of a man possessed, maddened, and exalted by drink. He levelled the pistol at Mary. Then he wrenched open the door and pulled her out onto the road, holding the lantern above his head so that all could see her. There were 10 or 12 men, ragged and unkempt, half of them as drunk as their leader, and when they saw who she was, a howl of laughter broke out, and Harry the peddler put his 2 fingers to his mouth and whistled. Mary said nothing.
"So you're dumb, are you?"
her uncle cried, hitting her across the face with the back of his hand and laughing at her cry of pain.
"Leave me alone. You're a bloody murderer and a thief. Your reign is over, Uncle Jos. I've been to Launceston today to inform against you."
A hubbub rose. The men pressed forward, shouting at her and questioning, but the landlord roared at them, waving them back.
"Get back, you damned fools. Can't you see she's trying to save her skin by lies? How can she inform against me when she knows nothing? Come on, you lazy, drunken devils. Let's get to the coast. Don't you want to feel gold and silver run through your hands?"
Jos Merlin stood for a moment, looking down upon Mary with a foolish, drunken smile. Then, on a sudden impulse, he caught her in his arms and pulled her towards the carriage. He threw her onto the seat in the corner and yelled to Harry the peddler to whip the horse up the hill.
"You'd inform against me, would you? You'd have me swinging on a rope's end like a cat? All right, then, you shall stand on the shore, Mary, with the wind and the sea in your face, and you shall watch for the dawn and the coming in of the tide. You know what that means, don't you? You know where I'm taking you."
She stared back at him in horror. The colour drained from her face. Mary shrank closer in her corner, away from the hot animal smell of her uncle, and resigned herself to the movement of the swaying, jolting carriage. It was the cessation of movement that dragged her back to the world. The sudden stillness, the cold, damp air blowing upon her face through the open carriage window. She was alone. The men had gone, taking their light with them. The carriage had been abandoned in a narrow gully. She listened intently. Borne up to her on the wind came a sound at once sullen and familiar, a sound that for the first time in her life she could not welcome. The sound of the sea. Mary shuddered. Somewhere in the darkness below, her uncle and his companions waited for the tide. Now that her senses were her own again, Mary found inactivity impossible. The carriage door was locked, but she struggled and pushed herself through the narrow window frame. She felt her way along the narrow ditch, stumbling over the stones, and did not see the humped figure of a man kneeling in the ditch, his eyes watchful of the lane ahead. She came against him, knocking the breath from her body, and he, taken by surprise, fell with her, crying out in mingled terror and rage, smashing at her with his clenched fist. It was Harry the peddler. He fought for possession of her, and she knew it. Aware that his strength was greater than hers, she lay limp suddenly to deceive him, giving him the advantage for the moment. He grunted in triumph, and as he moved his position, she thrust her fingers in his eyes. While he was momentarily blinded, she ran like a hunted creature up the twisting lane, tripping and stumbling over the ruts in the path. Her one idea was to escape from the thing that was Harry the peddler. It seemed as though she could hear the sea on every side of her now. The breakers, though she could not see them because of the fog, were louder and clearer. She crawled on uncertainly and knelt amongst driftwood and loose shingle, while not 50 yards away and directly in front of her were the high, combing seas breaking upon the shore. After a while, when her eyes had accustomed themselves to the shadows, she saw the little knot of men huddled against a jagged rock, peering ahead of them into the darkness. Their very stillness made them more menacing, and the attitude of stealth, the tense watchfulness, was a sight at once fearful and pregnant with danger. The mist began to lift very slowly. To the right, in the distance, where the highest part of the cliff sloped to the sea, Mary made out a faint pinprick of light. At first she thought it a star piercing the last curtain of dissolving mist. But reason told her that no star was white, nor ever swayed with the wind on the surface of a cliff. The group of men on the shingle below heeded it not. Their eyes were turned to the dark sea beyond the breakers. And suddenly Mary was aware of the reason for their indifference, and the small white eye that had seemed at first a thing of friendliness and comfort became a symbol of horror. The star was a false light placed there by her uncle and his companions, and out of the mist and darkness came another pinprick of light in answer to the first. This new light did not dance and waver like the one on the cliff. It dipped low and was hidden, and then it would rise again, pointing high to the sky. The new light drew nearer to the first. The one compelled the other, and still the men crouched motionless upon the narrow strand, waiting for the lights to close with one another. Mary could see the shadowed outline of a hull. Closer drew the mast light to the flare upon the cliff, fascinated and held, like a moth coming to a candle. Mary could bear no more. She scrambled to her feet and ran down upon the beach, shouting and crying, pitting her voice against the wind and the sea, which tossed it back to her. Someone caught hold of her, hands stifled her. She was trodden upon and kicked. Her cries died away, smothered by the coarse sacking that choked her, and her arms were dragged behind her back and knotted together, the rough cords searing her flesh. Then they left her there. Mary saw the black mass that had been a vessel roll slowly upon its side like a great flat turtle. Clinging to its slippery, sloping surface were little black dots that stuck themselves fast to the splintering wood like limpets. And when the heaving, shuddering mass beneath them broke monstrously in two, they fell, one by one, into the white tongues of the sea, little black dots without life or substance. A deadly sickness came upon Mary, and she closed her eyes. The men who had waited during the cold hours waited no more. They ran like madmen, hither and thither upon the beach, yelling and screaming, demented and inhuman. They waded waist-deep into the breakers, careless of danger, all caution spent, snatching at the bobbing, sodden wreckage borne in on the surging tide. When the first body was washed ashore, they clustered around it, diving amongst the remains with questing, groping hands, picking it clean as a bone. And, when they had stripped it bare, tearing at the smashed fingers in search of rings, they abandoned it, leaving it to loll upon its back in the scum where the tide had been. Whatever had been the practice hitherto, there was no method in their work tonight. They robbed haphazardly, each man for himself. The tide turned, the water receded. A grey colour came upon the water and was answered by the sky. At first the men did not notice the change. They were delirious still, intent upon their prey. Then Joss Merlin lifted his great head and sniffed the air. And he shouted, calling the men to silence, pointing to the sky. They hesitated, glancing at the wreckage unclaimed and waiting to be salvaged. And then they turned and began to run, silent once more, their faces grey and scared. They had outstayed their time. Success had made them careless. The dawn had broken upon them unawares, and by lingering overlong they had risked the accusation which daylight would bring to them. It was Joss Merlin who pulled the sacking away from Mary's mouth and threw her over his shoulder as he would a sack. He ran with her up the strand to the entrance of the gully, and his companions, caught up in a mesh of panic, flung the remnants of spoil upon the backs of the three horses tethered there. Some of them began to scatter, forgetting everything in a blind concentration on personal safety. There was a wild rush to the remaining farm cart, and the riot that followed was a hideous scrap. Those who carried pistols now had the advantage, and the landlord with his remaining ally, Harry the Peddler, stood with their backs to the cart and let fly with bullets amongst the rabble. It was the blood that won the cart for the landlord. For the remaining rebels, hysterical and lost at the sight of their dying fellows, turned and scuttled away like crabs up the twisting lane. Joss and the peddler wasted little time. What wreckage had been salvaged they threw upon the cart beside Mary. Miscellaneous odds and ends, useless and unprofitable, the main store still down on the beach and washed by the tide. Lying on her back in the cart, Mary watched the low clouds pass across the sky. Darkness had gone. She could still hear the sound of the sea, more distant and less insistent. From far away, across many fields and scattered ploughlands, came the merry peal of bells, odd and discordant in the morning air. She remembered suddenly that it was Christmas Day.